a very strange phenomenon, but the excavator, Asim Barghouti of the University of Jordan, wasn't ready to accept it, but it's a large enough quantity, so it is clearly there. The next site, Rashidiya, is vital, absolutely vital by its position. And now I'm going to back up to the map again while I continue talking. Rashidiya, I was just at a couple of weeks ago again, because it is so important. It is located right next to South Shuna, near Nimrin, or if you go across the bridge, or people go across the bridge to reach Jerusalem. It is a one-period site. It is located in the southern Jordan Valley, on the east side of the valley, immediately to the south of Shuna, about 1 kilometer south of Shuna. You don't want to visit the site. There's an army camp right nearby, and it's a little bit risky. But it is a small site, very low, and one period. There's nothing there except Iron 1A. That is the only site in the whole Jordan Valley which has definitely given us Iron 1A. Isn't that a rather unusual phenomenon? You notice I sort of skipped the Jordan Valley up till now. Rashidiya, right down here, is in the southern half of the valley. We did, as I told you before, an extensive survey of the whole Jordan Valley from north to south. And when we did that survey, I was in fact watching all the time for this type of pottery, because I was very anxious to know whether it existed in the north half of the valley, and if so, where. And it existed in the south half of the valley, and if so, where. And in the survey of the north half of the valley, we didn't find it at any single site, not one. Although we have big Lake Bronze sites up there, like Derawa, Tel Amazar, Tel Sa'idiyya, Tala, and all the rest. The big Lake Bronze city sites are up here. Then when we came to the southern Jordan Valley, we were almost at the end of the season, and I just assumed we would never find any Iron 1A for some reason in the valley until we excavated. When I didn't find the site, Perry Yassin found the site, but the pottery I read that night, and I just got extremely excited because we got it, and we got it in one place, which is right opposite Jericho. Now, we'll come back to the importance of that later, comparing that with the historical material. The north half of the valley, I put question mark Derawa. Maybe Derawa, which is excavated with the Lake Bronze destruction, and then on top of that is a certain feature, which we'll come back to, and then on top of that feature is Iron 1B. And I have a theory that Iron 1A is there in the middle. We'll come back to the evidence for this more. That it will be there, but in fact it hasn't yet been conclusively published from the site. If it is there, we're going to come back to the importance of that. Come on in, please, grab a seat anywhere here. We have what, about 10 minutes to go, is that right, by my watch? If Nirala gives us Iron 1A, or if Pella gives us Iron 1A, then the theory that I'm going to give you later will be proof. And until those two sites are tested, the theory that I'm going to give you has to remain a theory. But I'll give you the reason I have that theory as we continue to proceed. So, East Bank, we have lots of Iron 1A around Amman, down to Aroer, and up to Jerash. Then as we go south of Wadi Mojib, we have two sites of crucial importance which are not Israelite. They cannot be. They have to be Moabite. Along the Wadi Mojib, as you see it curving around here, forming a boundary for the Moabites. Then, as we go to the Jordan Valley, one pure site, which is in the southern half of the valley, and nothing definite in the north, but we'll come back to our theory why there may be some, or should be some, in that north half of the valley. Now let's go over to the west bank, Palestine, where there is also the distribution of this material is so important. First, we have many sites in the hill country proper. And I I will emphasize that the pottery and the artifacts from over here are in every way the same as what we have over here. And you'll see that when I show you. So there's no disputing that Iron 1A here is the same as Iron 1A there. It's a uniform culture in both places. Pottery, architecture, artifacts, and the like. They are the same on both sides. Okay, we have a lot in the central hill country. And over there, we have some definite evidence for putting it after Late Bronze. The first site where it was ever found was Tel Beit Mirsan. And we're going to come back again and again and again to Tel Beit Mirsan, which is a small site south of Hebron, here, south of Hebron, sort of in the foothills, halfway between the hills and the seacoast. Now, what is so important about Tel Beit Mirsan? Albright, W.F. Albright, excavated at Tel Beit Mirsan in the 30s. It's a little tiny site. It's incredible why he picked this site for excavation. He was a man who was infatuated by the notion that if he didn't dig during his lifetime, there'd be nothing left to dig. He didn't dig a lot, but in fact, in his own innermost psyche, when he was a young man and wanted to become a Palestinian archaeologist, he couldn't wait to get trained because he was reading all the literature about all the excavation going on. He was afraid it all be done and there wouldn't be anything left for him. No kidding, this is a published statement. So he, in fact, came over and picked strange sites, actually. I mean, he picked little sites. Normally, a man motivated like that would go for something big and glamorous, like the capital cities or something like that. Albright chose little tiny sites, which became very important. And I love the little sites too, I must say, so I sympathize with him. But it is strange that he picked it. Tel Beit Mirsan is a little tiny burg on the hills going down from Hebron to the coastal area. Why did Albright select this site? He had a theory, and he wanted to check it about the identification of the site and the history of the site. By its location, you'll see that it is halfway between the Philistine coast and the area which by biblical history would be Israel. All right? So he thought he would find evidence here of relation between the Philistines here and the Israelites here. And in that, he succeeded. What did he find when he excavated? This is still one of the benchmarks of my own argument, and I could be called in this respect the Neo-Albrightian on this particular argument. He found that the city was an extensive LB town, major Late Bronze city, which we would say is probably Canaan. That city was destroyed by a fiery destruction. Then, what came on top of that city? The first thing which appeared after the city was destroyed was a very thin layer, like this, very primitive, with pits all over the place. Horrible, rotten pits, which every archaeologist hates, but I, in fact, love their great fun. Pits destroy evidence, but they also give a nice uniform bit of evidence. When they have things inside them, it's like finding a cancerous tumor and removing it, but then that tumor is pure. It has nice, pure material inside it. All right. Albright found that this little occupation had pits cutting down into the LB destruction. What was in those pits? What was in those pits is the same pottery as is on the table. And he called it, at that point, Iron 1A. It was his terminology, and I'm following it, although a lot of people won't. That's his terminology. He found this very crude type of pottery and primitive architecture right on top of the Late Bronze destruction and cutting down into it. Then, that layer is abandoned, and on top of that, he found a major excavation, a major occupation with many bases and with additional pits which cut the Iron 1A material. And in this material, he found what he called Iron 1B pottery. And that's what we're going to describe in the coming lectures, three or four of them now, keep proceeding. This material has, I'll give it away, strong characteristics that link it with the Philistines. We'll come back to that later. This material, the Iron 1B. the Iron One A is extremely crude and primitive, and it follows the late bronze destruction. Then, to just finish this off, so you have the sequence, following this Iron One B occupation was a destruction, and on top of that was Iron One C, which is our period that we would link with David and Solomon. That's a new phase, we have a lot of new architecture, power, everything changes there also. Alright, Tel Beit-Nirsun is the site for breaking down Iron One into three parts. And a lot of people have questioned whether this is valid or not, but in fact, the sites that I have seen, the ones I've worked with, support it right down the line. I must say, I've been very, very convinced. The pottery that Albright published from this pit right here is just virtually identical in every way to what we got from Hespan in 1974, from our earliest Iron 1A material. And a lot of people, people like Bill Deaver, a very good fine archaeologist and good friend of mine, argues that Iron 1A is, you can't tell what it is. There's no, it's Albright kind of created it because it doesn't fit any other category. But Bill says that because where has Bill excavated? Bill has always excavated, usually, in the Philistine coast, and he knows Philistine pottery. He has never worked at an Iron Age site up in the hill country, and he hasn't ever seen this kind of pottery. I showed some of this to him when he was here last night, and it kind of just didn't ring a bell with him at all. I expected him to sort of jump out of his shoes. What's this, you know? That's exactly what Albright got there at Tel Beit-Nirsun. All right, so this is the sequence. Now, how did Albright interpret that? I can give it away already. Obviously, he interpreted the following way. The late bronze city is the Canaanite city. The Iron 1A material represents a short-lived Israelite occupation following the conquest, which was very primitive provincial. After that short-lived Israelite occupation came a major Philistine occupation, which took the city away from the Israelites and made it Philistine. And then following that Philistine occupation, David reconquered it for the Israelites in Iron 1C and made it Israelite. And that was his argument, and it was a very brilliant argument based on one site. He didn't have evidence from any other site at that time to compare with. There was no other site in all of Palestine or Jordan that he could say that has the same stuff. He was extrapolating from one tiny site, and somebody like G. Ernest Wright, after which the library is named, and who was my professor, wrote as recently as a couple of years before he died, several years ago, that Albright's Iron 1A pottery may not be found at many other sites. And Wright died before he was able to see a lot of the stuff that's now been coming out of East Bank, Jordan, where we have a lot of it as well, and East West Bank sites too. So Tel Beit-Nirsun is a kingpin in this whole thing. I think we have to stop, huh? It's quarter past.
Why all the pits?
That's a great question. But we're going to see that's at every site, most sites. It's one of the hallmarks of the period. We'll come back to that, all right? There are several possible answers for that. Okay, so next time we continue with the Palestinian sites, Beth Zur, etc.